Wow, this is absolutely incredible. It's been about 3 years since I was here for these youth lectures, and I have heard about how much it has grown, and now I see how much it has grown. And this is an awesome privilege for me and for the other speakers. It's a privilege for me just to come hear these other guys who will be speaking to you, but it is a privilege to be with all of you and to sing as we have sung together tonight. I don't get to do something like this very often. It is so special. Someone might say it's a taste of heaven. But if this is a taste of heaven, I want to tell you that the reality of all the redeemed of all ages singing praise to God in His presence with all of the attendant angels at His throne is going to be far beyond what I can even dream. Because in His presence is fullness of joy. And at His right hand are pleasures forever. Psalm 16 in verse 11. And so as wonderful as this is, some of you have traveled many hours and many miles to get to this great reunion here tonight. This will pale in comparison to His awesome presence forever. And it is an event like this that is designed to make sure and to help all of us to arrive safely there. And it will be a tragedy if the nearly 800 people that are here tonight, that only 799 of us made it there. The goal is for all of us to make it safely to that eternal shore. And may what we're doing in this place tonight contribute to that for you and for all of us. Thank you for allowing me to be a part of this weekend. If I mentioned the name Ted Williams, there would be a few of you guys of my generation, maybe some of you young men, who would think about that baseball player who was one of the greatest hitters of all time. But because of recent events, you might think of someone else. This Ted Williams. His video on YouTube went viral in 2011. He was a homeless man who used to have an occupation in radio, and a fellow videotaped him as he was asking for a handout, and he has his little card saying he was given a God-given gift of voice. And so he was recorded, and certainly he had a spectacular voice. And when this video goes viral, he ends up getting a job with the Cleveland Cavaliers. And then he did what he should have done wisely. He wrote a book, The Golden Voice, How Faith, Hard Work, and Humility Brought Me from the Streets to Salvation. And here is Ted Williams now as he appeared on the Wendy Williams show not very long ago. And I know because I saw it. I am a regular watcher of Wendy Williams. No, I am not. I've never seen the show before. I just so happened to be at Planet Fitness. And I know that surprises you too. I think because of my presence, they're going to call it Planet Non-Fitness. But one reason why I like Planet Fitness is that while I'm working out, I can forget the fact that I'm working out because I can watch all those television screens. And there it was, Wendy Williams show. Now, Sherry plugs her little earphones into the jack so she can listen. I don't do that. So I'm just watching the words that appear, the closed captioning on the screen. And so here I am watching it. I knew the story of Ted Williams, and there he was on the Wendy Williams show. And then he told me what had happened that caused him to be that man on the street that you first saw. At the birth of one of his 9 children, a friend of his, in a congratulatory gesture, gave him a reefer. And that was the beginning of his downward spiral. Shortly after that, I'm watching Undercover Boss. It was an older episode about the CEO of DirecTV. And he was introducing his family and his son, who was a recovering drug addict. And what caught me in that show was he said the same thing, that my son started down the road of drug addiction because someone had handed him a reefer. Marijuana, for those of you who don't know what that is. According to a marijuana website for addiction, marijuana is without a doubt the most popular illicit drug in use in America. 39.8%, it is estimated, of the population of the United States has experimented with marijuana. I thought that number was really high. In part because it is regarded as a safe drug. But marijuana is also considered a gateway drug. And the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration reports that the younger someone is who experiments with marijuana, the more likely he or she will use other drugs when they reach adulthood. Listen to this. 62% of adults who had used marijuana before the age of 15, 62% have used cocaine at some point in their lives. For those who had never used marijuana, the number is 0.6%. Wow. Marijuana is indeed a gateway drug. And yet I'm hearing more and more young people who will say, well, it's not that bad. And so I sent a Facebook message to someone I met in Alabama several years ago whose name is Kevin Simpson. I met Kevin Simpson while he was clinging to life in a Birmingham hospital. He was living very far away from God. And he had had a motorcycle accident that nearly took his life. Now, Kevin Simpson is a drug counselor. And so I said, I'm going to go to someone who knows. I'm going to ask him about this gateway drug business and what he might have to say to young people about the use of marijuana. And here's what he wrote me back. He goes, I hear this nonsense all the time. The argument is usually that marijuana grows on God's earth, so it must be good. To which I reply, cocaine and heroin also grow on God's earth. And most people who get all into the debate of weed being legalized and medical marijuana really just want to be able to get high without getting in trouble and getting judged. And then he says, bottom line, and Ted Williams could tell you this, and the son of the DirecTV CEO could tell you this, that marijuana is an extremely potent and addictive mind and mood altering substance. And he said, just because you cannot overdose on it does not mean that it's not dangerous. He said, I have several people in my facility right now who have lost everything from smoking weed. When people, especially Christians, tell me it's no big deal to smoke weed, I usually ask them why they are debating and defending fiercely something if it's not a big deal. If it's no big deal, then it will be no big deal to not smoke it or illegally buy it or be dishonest to people about it. He says, you know, drinking Gatorade to me is no big deal. Therefore, if someone told me that it had even a 10% chance of ruining my life or putting me in jail, I would have no problem putting Gatorade down forever. I would not defend it, march for it, and debate against people over Gatorade's right to exist. In my experience, people that defend and justify smoking marijuana are already in the grips of its power and cannot or are unwilling to put it down. Well, I don't know if anybody in here has experimented with marijuana or not. This is not a sermon on marijuana, but that's my 2 cents worth about that illicit drug. And look, yet it's illegal anyway. A Christian ought to abstain from it for that reason alone. But here's the point that I want to make about these two examples that I used, Ted Williams and this young man who was the son of the DirecTV CEO. And that is that peers, our friends, they influence us. And it doesn't matter whether you're 15 or 55, and I'm not that old. But it doesn't matter whether you're a teenager or you're in your 50s, you are influenced by the actions and the pressure and the behavior and the encouragement of your peers. And so as we have the proper foundations for faithfulness, what this weekend is all about, I want to encourage you, this is the heart of this message tonight, you need to surround yourself with friends who will influence you in the ultimate direction, a godly direction, so that you might live ultimately as God intended for us all to live. And as we look at the foundations of faithfulness this weekend, it is incredibly important that the closest of our friends and associates possess the same lofty spiritual goals that we have. So I want to speak to you for a few minutes about the friend factor. Now you knew the verse I was going to quote, right? 1 Corinthians 15:33. For those of you here at Westside, Mark Roberts has beaten you over the head with that verse. Bad company corrupts good morals. There's your passage that says exactly what I've just told you. Evil peers will influence. Now let me tell you something about that passage in 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 33. In the context of 1 Corinthians 15, Paul is talking about a false teacher, such as one who would say the resurrection has already taken place, or there is no resurrection. And so you need to beware of a false teacher who would encourage you to believe false things. But as we've used that passage so many times, it would apply to anyone who takes you away from the faith by his or her influence. And whether that's illicit drugs or a lack of sobriety caused by drinking alcohol, or the use of wicked words such as profanity and lying and gossip, or sexual immorality and lust and the fulfillment of those, we need to be careful of all the influences around us that discourage us from doing right. It's simple, folks. The message preached to Cornelius in Acts chapter 10, God is not one to show partiality, but in every nation, he who fears God and does what is right is welcome to him or accepted of him. And we need to beware of any influence that will discourage us from the practice of what is right or righteousness. Because the one that is welcome to God and who will experience that great reunion that I spoke of is the individual who fears God and does what is right. I forfeited my Texas citizenship card in a moment of insanity, and I moved to Auburn, Alabama for 3 years. From 2006 to 2009, But that's because I had a great opportunity to work with young people as I was the preacher for the University Church in Auburn, Alabama. Only about 150 folks, but 70 of them were college students. I love that college environment, War Eagle, to all Auburn fans. I'm probably the only one present. But it was awesome to see every school year in September all of these new faces who would come to Auburn. We'd have these 70 college students. They had their own Bible class that we had arranged for them. To see these new college students come in every school year. But inevitably, every year, we lost some of them. They would appear for a short time and then they wouldn't return. They came from families that were faithful Christians in other parts of the state of Alabama, and we would lose a handful every year. And we would do what we could to restore them, to get them to return and to worship with us regularly. Sometimes they'd worship when they went home to be with mom and dad, but they weren't worshiping in Auburn. Let me tell you about those kids. It was true every single time, every single one of them that we lost. You know who their closest friends were? They were not Christians. Without exception. Every single one of them that we lost. I want to talk about the importance your peers play in your life. How important is an occasion like this, that all of you young people can come together among peers who want to serve God faithfully? And as we talk about the friend factor, I want you to ask yourself right now this question. What is my plan for my life? Because you're at a stage in your life right now where you're making big plans. Where am I going to go to college? What kind of occupation am I going to pursue? And then the greater question, who am I going to marry? Where am I going to raise my family? Where am I going to live? And we're mapping out the strategy. We're mapping out the plan for our lives. And so I want to ask you right now, what is your plan for your life? And whatever you're thinking about, you need to ask a bigger question than that. And that question is, what is God's plan for your life? And you need to make sure that the two things coincide and work together. Now listen to me carefully. God doesn't just have a plan for preachers and for elders and for Bible class teachers. God has a plan that includes every faithful member of the body of Christ. And I'll tell you what I've discovered in almost 30 years of preaching. You can't begin to know the great things that God may be planning as a result of your faith. I know that from one story in the Old Testament. I love this story. It's the story of Jehosheba. Don't hear about her every day, do you? Jehosheba was the wife of Jehoiada the priest. In fact, I call Jehoiada and Jehosheba the Aquila and Priscilla of the Old Testament. The story of Jehosheba in 2 Kings chapter 11. An amazing story. King Ahaziah, a descendant of David, sitting upon the throne, he dies. His mother was Queen Athaliah. Now, some of you who know this story well may know who she is. She is bad seed. She is the daughter. This was an arranged marriage. Phil's going to be talking about arranged marriages, but this is somewhat of an arranged marriage between the king of Judah and the daughter of Ahab and Jezebel. Okay, her parents are Ahab and Jezebel. That's who Athaliah is. Now, when her son Ahaziah dies, she saw this as an opportunity to take the throne for herself and to be the ruler of Judah. And so you know what she does? She kills all of Ahaziah's sons. That would be her grandchildren. This is one bad grandma. And she succeeded except for one, whose name was Joash. And if you'll read with me, 2 Kings 11 and verse 2, "But Jehosheba, the daughter of King Joram, sister of Ahaziah, took Joash, the son of Ahaziah, and stole him from among the king's sons who were being put to death, and placed him and his nurse in the bedroom. So they hid him from Athaliah, and so that he was not put to death." And then at the age of 7, Jehoiada says, "Here's Joash, the rightful heir to the throne, and Athaliah is put to death." Now here's the story. Jehosheba did this because she thought, you know, if I do this, I'm going to find my name printed on the pages of inspiration, and everybody for the next several thousand years is going to be reading about what I did. No, that's not why she did that. She did what any sound thinking, righteous person would do in her circumstances. She saved the little boy because she could, because it was the right thing to do. Now, how influential and how important was that? God had made a promise to David in 2 Samuel chapter 7, one of the great passages of the Old Testament, that he would not lack a man to sit upon the throne. She preserved the royal lineage of David. This is the one, Joash, through whom Christ would come. How significant were the actions that day of this woman who was just living by her faith? I don't know if what you and I will accomplish will be as dramatic and as significant as what Jehosheba did that day. But I'll tell you what that lesson teaches me is that your role in the kingdom of God is significant, and it could be far more significant and could have a greater impact than you could ever realize. God has a plan for your life. And I want to tell you what it involves. I know this, God has a plan for your soul's welfare. That's what He intends for you. That's what He has in mind. And this is well described in Ephesians chapter 5, verses 1 and 2. What is God's plan for your life? Read it, Ephesians 5 and verse 1. "Be imitators of God as beloved children." That's what we are here this weekend to learn to do better. And as we talk about foundations for faithfulness, we're here to learn about being imitators of God as beloved children and to walk in love, just as Christ also loved you and gave Himself up for us, an offering and a sacrifice to God as a fragrant aroma. And so, as He has our soul's welfare in mind, I'll tell you what God's looking for. He wants us to produce a character that is in His image, or that is like Him and like His Son Jesus, who showed us an example that we should follow in His steps. It was an example of service for others, for all others. And He wants us to worship Him. "Humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that He might exalt you at the proper time." God's plan ultimately for you, as we humble ourselves before Him and as we pursue these things, is that He might ultimately exalt us, that we will reign with Him, Paul says in 2 Timothy chapter 2, and to help others to do the same. Now, do you have this diagram down? There will be a test on it later. You didn't know there was going to be a test. I'm getting you ready for school in the fall. This is God's plan for you. That's my purpose here. If I could put it in a nutshell, that's it right there. Now, let's talk about your peers and the influence that they have. What about an unbeliever's influence? What about your unbeliever's plan for your life? And I'm going to tell you, this is where it gets tricky. The devil doesn't come up to you and put his arm around you and say, "You know what? Let me take over. I want to ruin your life. I want to bring great misery and eternal condemnation to you. Why don't you come along?" No, it's a little trickier than that. He's skillful and less direct than that. I like what C.S. Lewis said in the Screwtape Letters about this. He said, indeed, the safest road to hell is the gradual one, the gentle slope, soft underfoot, without sudden turnings, without milestones, without signposts. You know, it's not a big marquee sign that says, hey, go this way and you're going to go to hell. He takes a more subtle approach than that. And so I'll tell you what our unbelieving friends do to us. They don't come up to us and say, hey, Tony, come with me. I'm going to ruin your life. That's not how it works. Here's what they do instead. They say to us, let's have some fun. Let's live it up for a little while. The soul, well, that's not really that relevant. The soul is hardly considered. You know, it's not that your friends want the worst thing for you. You know, here, I want Tony to be my friend. I want what's really bad for him. I want to destroy him. It's not that they want the worst for you, but they don't want your best either. Let's all be buddies. Let's all be pals. We're going to have a great time together. Well, you know, the wise writer talks to us about that. Would you turn in the book of Proverbs? Turn to Proverbs chapter 7. I knew I'd get Phil's attention with that, because he's going to talk to you about Proverbs chapter 7 tomorrow. No, Proverbs chapter 1. You're okay, Phil. Don't get worried. Proverbs chapter 1. Wisdom is crying out to be heard by the young man. Hear, my son, your father's instruction in verse 8. Indeed, they are a graceful wreath to your head and ornaments about your neck in verse 9. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. But here's what they say. Look at verse 14. Throw in your lot with us. We will all have one purse. This camaraderie will be great. Throw in your lot with us. We'll have one purse. We'll share. This will be great. And really, this was the initial get-rich-quick scheme. They would ambush people, and by violence, they would take from them. And so that's what's going on in this context. And then the wise writer says, my son, do not walk in the way with them. Keep your feet from evil. Verse 18, but they lie in wait for their own blood. They ambush their own lives. That's what I want you to notice. He says they will come to ruin. They will ambush their own lives. That's what the unbeliever's plan will do. We need to listen to the wisdom of this proverb. As he says in verse 29, because they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord. So many times people look at God's righteousness and His instruction and they say, like the psalmist in Psalm 2, let us cast away their cords and their fetters from us. You don't want to listen to what Mark's telling you or the preacher at your local congregation. That's restrictions. Who likes self-control? Throw that aside. Let's have fun. Again, the soul is irrelevant. That doesn't matter. A lot of folks these days would not even say that we're made in the image of God and that we have a soul. Soul schmoll, what's that? That's irrelevant. If you listen to that, I'm going to tell you what the result of that plan always is. Ambush. Ruin. Chris Emerson's going to speak to you tomorrow. Chris and I play golf together on a regular basis. I'm better than he is. Not really. I need to tell you about a young man who worshiped at Eastside in Baytown when I was there before I lost my mind and went to Alabama. And who worshiped there while Chris preaches there. This is earlier this year. The young man was there on Sunday morning. on Sunday afternoon. He went out on a boat with a girlfriend and another friend. There was drinking involved. Because of recklessness, there was a boat accident, and he died. Was it worship on Sunday morning? And when he should have been at worship on Sunday evening with the Lord's people, he died. Left behind parents, godly grandparents that I've known for a long time. Nobody plans for the worst thing to happen. Beware of the influence of your friends. I want to conclude with a few admonitions tonight. Refuse to settle for less. Stay with God's superior plan. I quoted C.S. Lewis a minute ago. I loved his little essay, The Weight of Glory, and a statement that he makes in there about God's offer to us. That a lot of folks don't realize, as God offers a holiday at sea, that many prefer instead to make mud pies in a slum. And he says it's not that people want too much, it's that they settle for too little. And if you reject God's plan for your life due to the influence of ungodly peers, or due to just simple foolishness, you are settling for less, not more. It's not that you want too much. I'm going to cast away God's fetters or cords because I want more out of life. You don't get more, you get less. And that's what Jesus was saying, was he not? What is a man profited if he gains the whole world and loses his soul? Do we ever stop to think about what Jesus is really saying there? If you had anything and everything in the world, if you had it all, but if you lose your soul, look, that tells us about the value of heaven and its importance in our minds. Because even if we had the whole world, if we lose our soul, we have settled for less. Five admonitions. Number one, you are not safe merely because you're in the presence of one who is a Christian. Don't let your guard down just because this peer that you're in the presence of is a Christian. Christians sin too. Have you not heard a story about two young people who were members of a local church getting into trouble together? One of them introduced the idea, or they introduced it together, and then they were a bad influence on each other and they get in trouble. Sometimes it's not just the unbeliever, the alien one outside of Christ. It can even be someone numbered among the saved. Don't let your guard down because you're with another Christian. Yes, let's start there. Let's make Christians our closest friends. But remember Peter? Oh, no, Lord, you're not going to die. No, no, no. And then Peter was told by the Lord, "Get behind me, Satan." On that occasion, he was being used by the devil. Secondly, you must be prepared to go against the flow. And I'll just tell you, from one who has been a young person like you and still influenced by peers today, that's not always easy. I was reminded of how difficult it is to go against the flow on Wednesday. I was canoeing up in northern Arkansas with Sherry and Brett and girlfriend Morgan, and my wife blames me. We ran the canoe into the bank, and for some reason I had the paddle on the wrong side, and we began to tip, and you know, once that boat starts to take on water, you're in trouble. And as I was trying to lean back to get the boat aright, there was this thing called the current. that just tipped us right on over. And I want to tell you, that water was cold. It was a spring-fed creek, and it was a shocking entry. I learned something about the current. You ever been standing in a river as the current was coming? That's what it is. When peers are influencing us, you've got to be ready, young people, to go against the flow. Thirdly, not only must you be ready to refuse temptation, but you need to be convinced of the surpassing wisdom of doing right and be equipped to explain it to others. Fourthly, be empowered by developing the traits of meditation, thinking about holy and righteous and good things, prayer, and self-control. And finally, absolutely rule out addictive behaviors. I am so thankful that I grew up among the Lord's people in a place where I was constantly being warned about the dangers of alcohol. I hope that's where you are. Don't listen to those who say to you that the social drink doesn't matter, because it does. Beware of all addictive behaviors. Drinking, marijuana, other drugs, pornography. Those things will destroy your life and soul. Don't settle for less. Remember God's plan for your life and make sure your plan for your life coincides. You be the influence to your peers. Don't let them drag you down Satan's road of destruction. Thank you for listening.